Welcome to Acorn to Oak with Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy. Within each acorn, there is the DNA that strives to be a mighty oak tree. All it needs to reach its potential for greatness is to be activated. You are the acorn. On this show, we will share with you the tools and guidance you need to grow into the person you are meant to be. And now your host, Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy.
Hi, good evening and welcome to the show. It's good to be back. And just to continue, because I actually had someone ask me, send me a message and asked, how's the house sale going? Well, guys, we managed to sell it in 48 hours. Everybody is just completely freaked about that. But it's the power of manifestation. I actually only ever imagined a sold sign by the front door, and it literally flew off the shelf and was sold within 48 hours for the asking price. So we can't moan at that one. So we're celebrating, but we're also in a little bit of feeling okay, which is overwhelmed and knackered, because we suddenly realise we've got to pack up and get out of here in about 6 weeks' time. And the amount of stuff we have in the loft is going to take some clearing through, should I say, but it's a brilliant opportunity to clear clutter. So what we're talking about today, what we're discussing today, is discovering and healing the children within you. And it's not just the inner child, because we have more expressions of the inner child than we're aware of, really. And it's like a whole cast of characters in that one concept of the inner child. Because if we're looking at it and we're looking at it and breaking it down, you know, the inner child basically consists of the infant self, obviously, the toddler self, the younger inner child, the grade school child, the young teenager within, the adolescent, the young inner adult, and then it goes on, obviously, to us growing up or growing ourselves up. And we all have those inner archetypes, and it's all part of inner child work. So when someone says, you know, your inner child, you know, what comes to your mind? You know, it's just like, it for me, it's very much the inner child is the carrier of our personal stories. It's the vehicle for our memories, both of what we had in actual childhood, but also the idolized concept of having this perfect experience, which very few of us actually had, and how that comes into our lives. And we think, well, you know, we watch and we see our friends and we always think, oh, their parents are much better than my parents, or why are they getting all the new toys and I'm still in the same trainers as I've had for the last 6 years, or whatever it is. And it's looking at it and realizing that actually, you know, what is the difference? You know, what's the difference between our concept of the inner child and the idolized fantasy? Because very much, you know, fantasy is very much part of the childhood experience. So just handing over to Matthew, because I haven't even let him say hello yet. That's not very good, is it? I've just launched straight into it. So, hi, Matthew. How are you doing this evening?
I'm great. It's good to hear the passion flowing. So, good afternoon, good evening to everybody who's listening, wherever you're listening from. really looking forward to tonight's show because throughout my own learning, I've done a lot of work within a child, and it's amazing the difference it can make. And for me, I think it was a really interesting experience because I'm well aware, and everybody does it, we all converse with self. So we'll have little conversations with ourself and come to some arrangement, or if we're planning something, we get a plan sorted. But it was only really when I started doing work within a child that you really get a sense that there are many parts to self. It's not just one person, so to speak, with one opinion. There are lots of different sides to us. See, we've mentioned archetypes before. But when I started doing work within a child, it was kind of like, you mean I can converse with a different part of myself? And my first thought was, oh my God, I'm hearing voices. I must be insane. Because when you start doing the deep work, you realize when you're getting answers back, it's a real profound sort of process to do. And like I said, my first thought was, oh, I must be insane, I'm hearing voice. Thought, no, it just proves that we're deeper than we realize. There are lots of different sides to self, and some of which that we've just ignored all our life. Like I had no idea of ego or archetypes in a child. So it was a real profound experience for me when you start working with the child, your inner child, because it's amazing, especially with some of the things that I went through in childhood, which I'm sure many other people, nobody had the perfect childhood, so to speak. So there's lots of stuff where we weren't respected, or we weren't able to voice certain things, or actually speak our truth through fear. And when you start reconnecting with inner child, you really, this stuff will come up, and it's a fantastic process to do, and just to explore with all the deeper parts of self.
I think it's what is really interesting more than anything else is, you know, this is not an area you necessarily rush through. It's something to take your time with. It's something, you know, it's a slow burn. And, you know, change often begins with the child within, because the child embodies a process of change. And, you know, when you actually look at a child and watch a child growing up, which I'm sure a lot of you already have done that already with your own children, is they can change who they are, you know, within a couple of hours. You know, for us, it's really interesting because Hector's going through the mine stage. So everything is his. You know? it reminds you of, you know, the seagulls in Finding Dory. And it's, you know, mine. So we go into the mind chart and with him, and he just looks at us sometimes and gives a very old fashioned look, and he shakes his head and just gets on with life. But it's really interesting how quickly, as I said, in health, how children can change and discover things and find new ways of doing things. And that's very much part about, you know, reclaiming some of the power of the inner child, you know, depending on what life experiences we've been through. But if we have had trauma in the past, if we are stuck in post-traumatic stress disorder or whatever that pathology may look like, it's about relearning how to re-parent self, because actually, we are our own best advocates and we are our own best healers. Because if something is traumatizing us from the past, then we need to go back to that time in our lives as an adult and reparent ourselves. Look at what those needs are. You know, as I was discussing before, you know, looking at those different areas of, you know, was it a problem with toddler self? Was it a problem with a, you know, a younger adult? Or was it, you know, grade school child within? Or was it the young teenager? And when you actually look at some of those areas and you start to work with them, you realize that the infant the infant self is very much where we start looking at identity, you know, when we resolve problems, you know, about trusting ourselves and others, feeling safe, knowing how to nurture and be nurtured. So that's very much part of the infant role. And then when we start talking about the toddler self, it's how you identify your differences. It's about being autonomous. It's about setting limits. It's about saying and being told no. You know, how many people didn't actually have experiences of being told no, and therefore they find that a very difficult thing to say in adulthood, when they're asked something, they constantly allow somebody not necessarily to take advantage, but if they cannot use the word no, then they're going to have a really quite limiting and damaged life experience. So if we've never taught ourselves to say that at that age, then it and dealing with the consequences of someone saying no to you and not taking it personally and realizing that everything can be negotiated in the universe. It's just a case of going, looking, okay, so that person doesn't like that boundary being crossed, but that doesn't mean I can't bring it in a totally different way that is empowering to both of us and therefore a win-win situation. So, you know, the toddler self is really important. The young inner child helps you identify the difficulties you may have accepting positive and negative qualities. This is most difficult, one of the most difficult developmental stages, because there's so many traits and values that need to be learned at that age. And how you learn to relate to yourself and others, and how you relate to your body, your sexuality, how comfortable you are of being curious at this stage. And, you know, that stage is when an awful lot of us actually disconnect with self. This is a stage where an awful lot of us can find it completely and utterly overwhelming, and therefore have difficulty relating to that, as I was saying, and disconnect with our authentic self. And then you start getting a split, and this can be real difficult at that stage, and that's before we even get to grade school, or what we would call in the UK primary school. If some trauma happens at that stage, it is like we disconnect. And I've been working with somebody over the last few years who did disconnect at this stage and has found it really, really difficult to reconnect with their authentic self. But has done some tremendous work and is moving through now to a much more integrated sense of self. So again, I've gone on and on, so I'm going to hand over to Matthew again so he gets a chance to put his take on this. So what are you thinking there, Matthew?
Well, one thing that came up for me is very much what does inner child really mean to me? What's been the greatest impact of discovering it? And I think very much for me, it's learning how to be, who to be. Because we all act differently around different people. We're maybe not as outgoing and as fun as we would like to be if you're in front of your boss and his wife or something like that. And very much when I discovered about inner child, it was a lot of the discoveries I got is I wasn't allowing myself to have fun. I was being way too serious with myself to the point where I was like my own headmaster. Where I couldn't do this and I can't do that and I can't just be my genuine, authentic self. Through fear of what others might say and because of some of the things I was told when I was a child. Because one of the things, you see it out in public so much, especially in supermarkets, very interesting place for seeing people's pathologies and behaviours. Because you'll have a child that's running around and looking at stuff and picking stuff up and just having a look. And they're not doing anything wrong. They're just exploring. That's what children do. They're in that hyper-creative state of everything's interesting and bright colours. And the amount of parents that tell kids off for having fun is, quite frankly, in England, it's outrageous. And it's no wonder that children grow up being told or thinking that they can't have anything because they get told off when they're doing something wrong, but at the same time they get told off when they're having fun and actually they don't have the comeback to the parent of saying, actually, I was just having fun there and experiencing and I was going to put that box back, so... what's your issue with my behaviour on this one? I'm not sure many kids would have that response with their parent. So naturally, because there's no comeback for them, they're just made wrong. So for me, when I realised that, I realised how I was restricting myself. And obviously childish behaviour can get very boring and tedious. However, childlike behaviour is what makes you melt when you see your children playing and letting their imagination out. It's what makes your heart glow for me when I see my niece and nephew really out in nature playing. There's nothing quite like it because you feel the joy that they're feeling. So for me, it was reintegrating or rediscovering that fun side of self where actually age is just a number we put on things. And as long as we're not being childish, there's no reason why we can't be childlike and bring out that joy and have that fun because we take life way too seriously. And you think life's a game. You're in this body suit as this person for one lifetime. So you might as well enjoy it. And so that was what really came up for me was that was the one thing it really allowed me to connect back with my genuine self, who I was when I was a child, and obviously go through some of the things that I've been told, and which obviously in later life turned into limiting beliefs, and changing those limiting beliefs and allowing Matthew to be Matthew and have that fun.
I think also it does happen at that sort of grade school child within age where, you know, we're meant to explore. We're meant to, as you say, we're meant to be out there exploring and looking at how things work. Also how our relationships work. We're meant to be making friends with peers, with other children who are our own age and seeing how the world works. It's also, you know, where we identify and work on difficulties that you might you may have had at the beginning of your life by beginning and completing projects. So we learn that that's where we learn to actually start a project and complete a project. It's about public speaking and attaining professional success. We lay down all of those things at the grade school Child Within. And if we don't do it then it will lead to problems in our productiveness later on in life. And, you know, again, looking at the next stage of the young teen within, which helps us understand and deal with awkwardness. You know, we always look at it, don't we? The teenage years, we always look at the awkward. We have a saying in the UK of, you know, we're part of the awkward squad, because you know, they learn how to speak grunt, and
yeah, absolutely.
They don't actually articulate anything. They just go and so. I'm not too sure if they have in the States. You know, the words that they usually come up with is bothered. Do I look bothered? and you know, they have a tote, whatever, yeah, whatever. And it's, and it's, you know, they just have this different language. You know, somebody very nicely told me what sick meant the other day. And they said, sick as in not vomiting, Penny. We know you're an ex-nurse. We're not talking about vomiting. It's sick. So it's really good, you know. Well, thank you for sharing that. as if I hadn't already heard it a few times. But it's, you know, it's looking at very much how we relate to others, you know, the other teens in the group, the feeling of awkwardness, you know, your ability to tolerate discomfort at this age, and learning how to self-talk your way through it. Because, you know, I know very much when I first, you know, when I first left home and I went to nursing college. And very much the first day, it was like I obviously went back into feeling very awkward. I mean, I was 17 when I started nursing, so I wasn't an older teenager. I was still in mid-teenage years, and it's just thinking, oh, do I look, you know, the good old female thing of, do I look fat in this nurse's uniform? I mean, nurses' uniforms in the UK in those days were like dish rags, so they had no form or tailoring or anything to them, so it just hang from the shoulders. There was no nipping in at the waist or anything. You couldn't possibly do anything like that. So, yes, we all, I think, felt really awkward. And you just have to, you know, placing a frilly hat on your head was not the most most wonderful thing I've ever done in my life. But, you know, it did give you an identity which you related to, which I think gave you a sense of safety in those years. But it's also, you know, learning, as I was saying, how to manage that discomfort without making it about you, without making it about yourself. So, you know, those are the good old adolescent child within years. And then the younger adults, you know, the young inner adult, you know, it's very much looking at working with or dealing with any of the developmental stages that you did not really go through. You learn and revise the skills needed to move on into the adult world. You know, many of us fail to make this move successfully. You know, an awful lot of us, unfortunately, in the world today have chemical dependencies or emotional dysfunction. Or, you know, family loyalties prevent us from growing up. And, you know, we need a rite of passage And it's one of the things that we don't do in the West very well. We don't have a rite of passage which enables us to move into adulthood. And it's really important to look at some of these things and go, okay, so what did I miss? What is my inner child yearning for? What is it that, if I'm looking at the inner child and recovery of my inner child, and for it not, abstaining from destructive behaviour of becoming dependent on dealing with one's past, it's really important to realise that, yes, some of that stuff didn't get done. And, I have an amazing life, and I, obviously have a private practice and work with people on a very, very deep level, which is, my honour and blessing. And it's looking at it, and just for me, as a therapist, it's very much being like a detective and going, what is it that this person didn't do the first time round that needs to be completed now in order for them to move on into a healthy adulthood without dependency? And it's really, really quite interesting stuff. And it may be just one of those developmental stages that hasn't been completed. And literally, you can do it within half an hour. And that is what is astonishing about the work that I get to do, and I know Matthew gets to do also. And it literally is just a tweak. So anyway, I'm going to let Matthew talk, and I'm going to have a drink of water so I can get rid of this cough. Okay, so off you go, Matt.
I think it is one of the most, it's the best thing about doing what we do, is being able to help people discover that their authentic selves, but then also in the knowing of how much it made a difference in my life, it's going to make the same difference in their life. And I'd sort of wish everybody in the planet would get this sort of the opportunity, because I think one thing that came up for me earlier was very much, I think when we look at how we generally parent our children, everyone has different views, but at schools we teach them subjects, and some of which are very useful, maths and languages and that sort of thing, but there's no sort of life skills, there's no how to have fun, or no discovering self, because we're all the same, we all forget when we wake up all the knowledge that we had before from previous lifetimes, and we're just this being which is sort of relearning everything. So that's why kids are so inquisitive, and we have no idea about life, we have no idea about emotions, we have no idea about anything until we learn it. And I think for me, if I could create one class at school, it would be teaching children about emotional intelligence, about how to be a happy, joyful human, because I think we teach them some really important subjects, but we're going wrong somewhere, because we're going round in ever diminishing circles as generations go past. And I know very much at the moment there's a huge focus on emotions and trauma and how it does affect you. To quote somebody, they said, if you were walking down the street and you stepped on a nail and you had a 6-inch nail sticking through your foot, would you A, go to the hospital and get it sorted, or B, would you wait and sit on it and tell yourself, no, I don't want to feel that pain, it's too traumatic, It's a horrible experience. I'm just going to suppress it and leave it for 6 years until your legs gangrene and you have to have it chopped off. Or would you be, deal with it there and then? Well, of course, anyone would say, oh, well, I'll deal with it there and then. So why are we not doing that with our emotional pain? Because there's the stuff around childhood, bullying, there can be abuse, there can be all sorts of stuff in childhood that we don't understand, which has an emotional impact on us, and we just suppress it. So by the time we get to mid-20s, as Penny said, a lot of people are relying on chemical drugs, or whether it be alcohol or whatever it is, just to emotionally cope. And I think if we taught children young and taught them when they were young to have that understanding, my God, there'd be one hell of a generation sort of change, because I think it's so important for kids to learn that. I mean, if I had a manual around emotional intelligence as a kid, I would imagine that life would have been so much easier. So dealing with death of loved ones or split relationships, abusive relationships, whatever it is, unless we deal with it emotionally, we just suppress it. And it is just trying to suppress that nail in the foot. You wouldn't do it physically. So why the hell are we doing it emotionally? And so I love the way he told that story and put it across, because that's exactly what we're doing. And we need to reconnect with our emotional selves and sort of dig through. And it seems people have a resistance because they think, oh, emotions, that's scary. I don't want to go there. Well, it's as easy as feeling it and dealing with it. Obviously, subconscious connected breath work, breath to life, is the fastest, most effective way of doing that I've found. And it's the getting out of the conscious mind into the subconscious and really revisiting that moment, and it, just for a moment, and then using the breath to clear it. And this is the thing that's so satisfying, is working with people. And when you first tell them about it, they say, oh, well, that's a really interesting concept, but I'm not sure how much difference it's going to make. And of course, you sit there and you try not to smile because you know how much difference it's going to make. And then as soon as you've done the process, it can be a matter of hours or days, but you'll get the comeback and, oh my God, this has changed my life. I've connected with another part of self, and this has happened and that's happened. And that's the best bit of the job, because we get to help people actually change their lives. And there's nothing more satisfying than that. Which is why I started doing this work in the first place. I thought, well, there is nothing like it in helping other people change their lives. I'm only assisting them. They're doing the work, so it's just fantastic.
And I think that, you know, for me, that is the most important thing when dealing with or doing inner child work, is knowing that actually you're investing in yourself. You're taking time to invest in yourself. You're taking time to explore yourself. You're taking time to listen and to put in any skills and tasks that you didn't learn when you went through the childhood experience the first time. And, you know, we're all aware of things that, you know, we might turn around and say, oh, well, I'm not very good in social circumstances. So you look at, okay, so what part of myself when I was going through my childhood felt awkward or felt that I couldn't connect with my peers? And so if you knew, what age were you when you first identified that you were having problems doing that? And, you know, it's not about beating up our parents. It's not about saying, well, why didn't someone teach me how to do that? It's actually now taking the responsibility to go back and reparent yourself. I mean, Matthew and I were talking very, very briefly earlier on today, and Matthew's always had this thing about not going in the sea because it's way too cold. And he was actually saying to me that, you know, because we're going to see each other at the weekend and he's going to come down to us and I live near the ocean. So he's going to say, it's about time I dealt with that. And I said, well, you know, it depends on the weather. You know, obviously, if it's British cold weather, we won't bother. But I just went, you know, maybe we could deal with that one together and actually just run into the sea and just throw ourselves in, whatever temperature it is. And it's looking at it and just going, OK, so what part of Matthew's inner child basically says, you know, had came up with this belief that, one, it wasn't nice sensation, it wasn't safe to do so, and cold water is nasty, and all of those things. And it's about taking opportunity to rewrite that script, to rewrite those judgments, to rewrite those limiting beliefs. Not that I think it's necessarily a limiting belief not to like the cold sea. I can identify with that one. I prefer to be in the Mediterranean, so it's nice and warm. But that's my, you know, that's my preference. So it's looking at it and just going, okay, so what age were you when this belief or this problem was beginning to be identified? In other words, in your normal childhood, not, and then to work with the inner child and go back to that, identify the pain, and we'll continue this after the break. So
yeah.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of OM Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
Long ago, you wouldn't think of galloping on a horse while doing calligraphy, and you wouldn't have attempted to ride your bike while typing a letter. Yet you think you can safely operate a multi-ton vehicle while texting? Behind the wheel is no place to multitask. If you want to BRB, drive now and text later. Lives depend on it.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
So we're back. So just before the break, I was beginning to talk about the six-step formula that we use within Acorn to Oak to help people. And, you know, although I call it six, it's a six-step formula, most of this is also done during a Breath for Life breathwork one session. So it's looking at, you know, identifying the pain, researching where the pain is. And when I talk about pain, I'm talking obviously about not just physical pain, but mental or emotional pain of are we looking at something that happened really young in your life, or is it just something that you never completed? So it's usually during the breathwork that we actually regress into the pain, because as you breathe, as you're using the breath, you can actually, the pain can momentarily feel overwhelming, but if you're continuing to breathe and to shift through it, then it's no way, you know, it's like if you ask a pregnant lady, well, not a pregnant lady, but a lady who's gone through birth, do you remember the pain? And they go, yeah, I remember the pain, but it was manageable. And I use the Lamaze breath to keep on breathing through it. And actually, the result was so amazing, you know, meeting my new baby, that the pain was forgotten really quick. And I would say to you, it's the same during a Breath for Life breathwork session, is you can actually deal with whatever pain that be, whether it be a physical pain, a mental pain, or an emotional pain, really easily by keeping the breath moving. And the results, as you heard Matthew talking about earlier on, it may be a day or 2 days later, or it may be a week later, when you get the amazing aha's and the amazing feeling of freedom. So that's, you know, regressing into the pain, you know, what you feel, you can heal. And that's what is really important to remember. So during this, there is an objectification or an interaction with your pain. You deal with it, you see it, you smell it, you taste it, you touch it, you breathe it. And in, you know, grieving and healing your pain, you are then in a place of empowerment, so you can repair itself from a place of empowerment. And it's just looking at it and going, okay, so I'm going to pick something really idiotic and stupid. If you didn't have enough candy floss in your life, yes, in other words, you'd never tasted any, and you feel that that is a desperate situation to be in, as an adult, take yourself to a fair and make sure you get your fill of candy floss. And yes, that's using a very simple explanation, but it's also looking at, there is a wonderful video of a great spiritual teacher. And this spiritual teacher's name was Paramahansa Yogananda. And he was the head of the Self-Realization Fellowship. And, you know, we were talking about the difference of being childlike and childish. And someone gave him a wind-up toy for Christmas. And it was a truck or something like that. But you can see him on the drive at Mother Center, which is in Mount Washington in L.A., and he winds up this toy, and of course it looks fantastic because it was in the 1950s, so it looks like a Charlie Chaplin movie, but it's not. It's just those old black and white movies. And he winds it up, and the look of joy on his face as he lets it go, and it hurtles down the drive at Mother Center, and he's running behind it. And the look of joy and just excitement as he's chasing this wind-up toy down the road. And this is a spiritual master. And he is just showing his childlike joy. And if you haven't had experiences of wind-up toys, or you would like to experience them again, just reparent yourself so that you can actually have that experience. It was quite funny this afternoon. I had to go to the pharmacy to pick up some prescriptions, and I must admit, you would have thought that they would have gotten them ready, but they weren't ready. So I literally had to take my 2.5 son with me because childcare had finished and everything else. So he came along with me to the chemist, and I tell you, bless his cotton socks, he was really good for the first 15 minutes. He stood in line with me, just holding my hand. And then after about 15 minutes, he got bored. So he took off down into the shop. And literally, he was amusing quite a few different people in the shop because he was literally doing what Matthew described. He went down into the makeup aisle, and I was going, mate, you don't need makeup, you're beautiful enough as it is. And we, there were two lines, so I was jumping one side and saying boom, and he was jumping the other side, and so we were playing and amusing everybody in the pharmacy. In fact, actually, what it did was actually the pharmacists sped up to get us out of the shop, so they really worked quite well. too much racket, too much fun being her, definitely too much fun being her. But it was just really quite interesting when Matthew was talking about it earlier on, and I was smiling to myself saying, yeah, I've had an experience of that quite recently. But I actually joined in.
I had one myself. We did a show a couple of years ago, and I happened to have my niece and nephew there. And I was chatting there, standing there talking to someone, and my nephew was intent on running round my left leg, but going between my legs and round, pretty much swinging round my knee. And then my niece was climbing up one side, scrambling over my shoulders and climbing down the other side. And sure, as an adult, I'm stood there and I'm trying to have a professional conversation, and there may have been part of me that found it slightly annoying because it was distracting me. However, there was a much bigger part of me that didn't care. And the lady actually turned around to me and said, oh, do you not find that really annoying? I couldn't handle that. And I said, but they're having fun, so why would I stop them? And she couldn't get over putting myself first and saying, well, actually, it's annoying, so I'm going to tell them to stop. It's like, no, let them go for it, because I think you can join in with their fun.
It is just so, it's amazing how many of us would be embarrassed or whatever it is, and actually there's nothing to be embarrassed about. And it's looking at that, if it comes up in you as an adult, it's actually looking back. That's just telling you that there's something that you haven't dealt with in your own growing up that actually makes you feel confident enough to know that you're acceptable wherever you are and whatever you're doing. And it is really just real interesting stuff, how we limit ourselves. So in doing, obviously this has been a whirlwind tour of how to work or how to get to grips with some of the inner child work. There's been a plethora of people writing on inner child work and recovery. If you Googled it, you'd be snowed under with the amount of work that has been done on this particular subject. And I'm sure there must be, I haven't checked it out, but I'm sure there must be a plethora of videos and YouTube things. And I would highly, highly suggest that if you're finding that there is something limiting your life and this conversation has resonated with you, then get onto your computer, Google it, and pick people who resonate with you, who you feel drawn to. You know, if you're in the UK, then we're in the UK, and that's great. Come along to one of our inner child workshops, or I'm running something on Sunday, you know, which is great. It's all about the inner child and how to work through all of these things. Just get in touch, reach out and say, you know, I could do with some expertise help on this. As I said, you can do that via Google, you can do it via the On Times, you can do it via us. It's just realizing it's time for you to make this investment of learning what aspects of self may need a little bit of help, may well need a little bit of brushing up on. And it's amazing what changes happen once you begin to feel safe and secure in your own bodysuit. You will begin to enjoy it and you'll begin to engage much more with life. So again, handing over to Matthew so he can have his say.
Yeah, I think one of the things, I've got to be honest, I haven't really found it necessarily with my clients, but a lot of people, the resistance around doing some of the deep work is... It can be money, and there are no limits here. You shouldn't limit yourself like that, because you can tell yourself stories as to why you're not going to do something, but actually when you look into it, it's really not that expensive. As Penny said, there's plenty of experts out there, there's a lot of knowledge around this, and what I usually come back to people with, if people say, oh, but isn't that sort of thing expensive? And it's generally because they haven't researched it. But even if something is expensive, how much do we spend on our houses and our cars and our lifestyles? Probably way too much. We invest in many things to improve our life. So why wouldn't we invest in ourselves to improve our emotional health? We would spend money on gym membership, and spend an awful lot of money with diets and going to the gym to sort of be this person you'd like to be seen as. Or you could do some of the inner work and not need to be that person just because of what others think or whatever it is. You can see what I'm getting at. We spend a lot of money investing in things in life that we think are going to make us happy. But the thing we fear is actually investing in the thing that will guarantee us to be happy. I mean, it's almost like a universal secret. If you want to be happy in your life, deal with your emotional stuff. Because what is joy? What is happiness? What is love? They're emotions. So it's only if we use an emotional tool can we deal with those emotions and can we really improve our lives. Which for me really resonates because I did a lot of anger management when I was younger and some counselling and that sort of thing, just trying to delve in and find out why I wasn't happy. But that's the thing, the professional, and they were a very good professional and very good at what they do, but they hadn't trained in emotional intelligence. They'd only trained in the mind stuff, the rationalization, which is a 10% of us. But the much bigger side, the emotional side, they just didn't have any knowledge around. So for me, as a client, I would walk in there. They would pretty much, we would go through what was not going right in my life or investigating my emotional stuff, which basically puts you in your emotional stuff. So you spend an hour in a place where you don't feel safe and you don't want to talk about things. And then they slap you with a big bill and say, thank you very much. I'll see you next month. So for me, talk therapies just really didn't do it for me because I didn't I didn't get any results, any profound results. I would say I got more results in being in an office with Penny for 2 hours than I did doing a year's anger management. Because to be real honest, on some occasions, when you're talking specifically with anger, when someone sat there and they're just talking to you about what makes you angry and why do you feel so angry, you almost feel like punching their lights out because they've made you angry. And they bring up your emotions, but talk's cheap, action's where it's at. And it's only really when you put that action in and you deal with that emotion, very much like Penny was saying earlier, you revisit it, those emotions come up, you deal with those emotions, and the memory doesn't go away, but it's like the memory of a physical injury, where you broke your toe when you were younger, you went to the hospital, they put it in a splint. You had faith that your body was going to heal itself, because that's exactly what your body does. And you move on, and it's just a distant memory. There's no trauma there. Whereas at the time, it was a major trauma. So doing the same with your emotions is what we need to focus on and do.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed the show. We've enjoyed doing it. And we'll see you next week.
Brilliant. Take care, everyone. We'll see you soon.